I would definitely put it in the top 10.
It's so good.
A lot more thought has gone into the story.
I think it's awesome.
This is a spy movie disguised as a superhero movie.
There's such clear-cut good and bad.
It's definitely got some horrific elements.
Well, once we go there, you're just going to throw physics out the window.
That's not how this works. That's not how any of this works.
This is like the Fast Times at Ridgemont High of the fantasy world. Yep. Wow. That was something else. Now, kids, your homework tonight is to go home and watch this on television.
At that point in the script, you're actually rooting for her.
And I am just giggling maniacally through the whole thing.
When slashers came home.
I love that they just throw you in there and say, okay, find your way out. A lot of people don't like horror movies.
It's a coming of age, not a horror movie.
But I still love it because it's a slice of life, and I'm okay with that. Tim really wants to like this movie.
I loved the production design.
I wanted more from this movie.
Your reality is not what you think it is.
Oh my God, am I destroying our podcast?
I'm going to show you something beautiful. Everyone screaming for mercy. You want to protect the world, but you don't want it to change. You're all puppets. Tangled in strings. Strings.
The end. The end of the path I started us on.
Nothing lasts forever.
Hello, hello, hello out there in YouTube and podcast land. You have reached Johnny Has the Keys, where we talk about horror movies and science fiction films and the key elements that lift and or separate them from the average genre fare. Are you new to us? Well, we're glad to have you. David and I have been old friends for quite some time, and we have talked movies for an equal amount of time, and his specialty is science fiction. My specialty is horror, or should I say our favorite genres. And we have pretty much been steeped in the quicksand of both for so long that I don't think a day goes by that I'm not talking about something that's horror movie related.
Of course.
Yeah. And instead of just exchanging this kind of information with ourselves, we decided a few years back to do a podcast. We cover a century of movies. We pick a few from each decade every season, pare that down to 40 episodes a season, and try to give you a good variety of stuff that has been around with us for the last 100 years. Those of you that are coming back already know that, and that's why you're here, and we appreciate that, and we are very glad to have you. I am here with David, my good friend. David, how are you doing?
Doing well, doing good. It's sad and happy. It's our last episode of the season, but hey, we got another season coming.
So oh, man. And I'm already looking forward to it.
Yeah.
We've already
me too.
Narrowed the selection.
And we like to break the ice with, what have you been doing your genre week? I finally caught up on Fallout Season 2.
Oh.
I had not watched it because I was waiting for every... I love the fact that it was one episode at a time, but I wanted to make sure that the entire season was available before I started doing that. So for the past couple of weeks, I've been catching one or two every other night sort of thing, and am still very happy with it. I think it is probably the best adaptation of a game done before, and there have been several that I've liked. I liked Silent Hill. I liked the first season of, not This Is Us, The One of Us.
The Last of Us or something.
Last of Us.
Yeah.
So first season was really good. Second season fell off. Not as good as the first. But this one didn't have that. Season two was just as good as season one. More intriguing, more expansive. Actually, I liked one. In season one basically follows three distinct characters and their own little adventures and how they link up and then separate and everything else. Yeah. This is the same way, but I actually liked one of the characters a lot more in season two and what he did in season two than in season one.
I have been watching Celebrity Jeopardy All-Stars, and Macaulay Culkin is on it, and he is in the second season of Fallout.
He has three or four really good scenes, and he's really good at it. Yeah.
Okay.
Walter Goggins is... No, he does not. He's actually a mean character. It's really interesting.
Okay.
But Ella Purnell is essentially the lead. Walton Goggins is the second lead. And then you got a newer actor named Aaron Moten, who's the third that they follow. But it expands on everything that happened in season one and gets it even better and everything else. You've got more with Kyle MacLachlan, who's a character in it now too. Leslie Uggams is in it. It's... And it expands. It essentially goes into the game version, which I have played. It's basically dealing with the Fallout Vegas. New Vegas is the name of the game. And it has a lot of elements from that. But it's not like The Last of Us, where it's literally recreating the storyline. It's taken the storyline in way expansive ways. So if you've played the game, you love the Easter eggs that are in it and the stuff they allude to, but you're not playing the game. I'm watching the game be played sort of thing, plot line wise. So really strong, really good, highly recommend it.
Awesome. It's on my list. Yeah. I want to watch it. And The Boys is coming back. I cannot wait. It's like their final season. Lots of stuff.
You watched season one of Fallout, right?
I did. I have not seen season two though. Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, you'll like it.
Cool. Over in my genre week, I was looking for something that might be a little bit appropriate to a season finale. And man, did I find it. I have been watching a lot of documentaries. Shudder's really good for having great documentaries. And I watched In Search of Darkness, 1995 to 1999.
That movie documentary is actually 4 years long.
It's actually six and a half hours. Yes, it is very long.
Jesus. Okay.
For those of you that remember past genre topics, I know I've talked about the original In Search of Darkness, which was like a best of the 1980s horror. And it was all these movies are all like 6 hours long. And the 80s one, especially if you look on Rotten Tomatoes, like the first one gets 100%, the second one gets 80, and the third one gets like 60. Because as you get through 6 hours of movies in a decade, they tend to be the bottom of the barrel when you get to the last series. This series is only two seasons, or should I say two movies. You've got 90 through 94 and 95 through 99. I have not seen 90 through 94 because it hasn't dropped on Shudder yet. So I'm watching this one. I figured it didn't matter to watch them out of order. And what I confirmed with this movie is that there is a wasteland of bad horror movies in the 1990s. This is the cream of the crop, so to speak, because they could potentially do another one, but this is supposedly the best. And occasionally they'll have one like Scream or the movie Seven or even the Blair Witch Project for you folks out there that like that movie. But yeah, so there's gems. Spaced out. There's gems in between, but you've also got the I Know What You Did Last Summer and that kind of stuff too. It's directed by David A. Weiner or Wiener. I'm going to say Wiener. And he David A. Wiener directed all these movies. I've got that the consensus is that this is the worst of all the documentaries. And like I said, it is 6.5 hours long. So I watched it in stages. I watched it in like hour-long stages over a week. There is some great commentating on this, though, which is what make these documentaries for me, when they have good people talking about the movies. Some of the good ones in this one are Charles Band, Doug Bradley, Pinhead himself, John Carpenter, David Desmalchian, Ernest Dickerson, Mike Flanagan, and Mick Garris. So a broad scope of directors, actors, kinds of thing as far as commentating. Mm-hmm. The synopsis is exploring the late 90s horror, covering the meta slasher boom, techno horror, teen screams. It includes movies like Scream, I Know What You Did Last Summer, and Ringu. It features interviews with horror icons and expert commentary covering the era's cultural, social, and technological trends, which is another reason why it's interesting, because it is a slice of history as well. What's going on at the time? Yeah. Like a lot of stuff about OJ. Why is this in this movie? It was around the time the OJ Simpson stuff was going on, that kind of thing. I've got that. Neither of these 1990 installments of the In Search of movies are even on Rotten Tomatoes. I'm guessing the reviewers gave up because the length of the film was so long. I don't know. But I'm going to watch them all because I'm a completist. So there. That's what I did in my genre. You're going to watch week. Them all.
Interesting. Do you think the drop in quality is because we had 2 decades of great horror movies? Like the 70s and 80s have some of the best horror movies of the past century.
Yeah, and that would make a good documentary in itself, going from genre to genre by decade like we do on the podcast. Because yeah. 90s was the introduction to CGI. So some of it just looks terrible.
And I also think people wanted to get on, quote, the horror train, but they didn't want to put the money or the creativity behind it. So that's why you have all the schlock that came out.
Yeah.
Kind of the 50s had great science fiction and horror, and the 60s didn't. The 60s ended up cheesing on it a lot and making exploitation movies a lot and that sort of thing. Well, but the 70s and 80s, we went everywhere from Exorcist to Halloween to...
Well, and Nightmare, even the 80s, you had Nightmare on Elm Street and Fright Night and Return of the Living Dead. Back then, they were still practical effects. But what I was going to lead up to, and this is just me hypothesizing, but you also had the boom of the videotape business. And by the 80s, there was a lot of direct, like late 80s, direct-to-video crap.
Yep.
And that may have spilled over into the 90s as well, especially with the CGI stuff, because it was cheap and you could get it out there fast. So that could be part of it too.
And you're also beating a dead horse if it's all slasher movies. You know what I mean? So it's like they had to wait till they got to like a Blair Witch or a Scream, which is making essentially fun of the entire genre itself, but a unique... something very unique to stand out of this muck of just everybody's a serial killer kind of movie.
Yeah, they dwell a lot on the J-horror stuff in the late 90s, which essentially did revolutionize movie making in America because, like you said, it was something different. It was not a slasher movie or an I Know What You Did Last Summer. It was like, what is this crazy possessed demon coming out of the well and out of my television set, that kind of thing. We've never seen that before. And then all of a sudden, as we get into the 2000s, and even mainly the 2010s is when I think all the originality started coming back with the Flanagans and the Ty Wests and stuff like that.
Again, niches that nobody else was doing. Whether it's Ty with all of his retro sort of production value and everything.
I love the 80s. Let's make Flanagan. It look like the 80s.
Yeah. Mike Flanagan with incredible plotting and character development in very confined spaces. Yeah.
Or Ari Aster doing Hereditary and Midsommar and taking old ideas and modernizing them and just so dark, very dark.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Oh, my world of horror.
And your World of Horror was about creating monsters, and that's a good segue to our ultimate final finale, whatever, of this season, which is we are going back into, quote, fantasy land and or comic book land and or what everybody knows as the MCU, and doing the second Avengers movie, The Age of Ultron, which does deal with them kind of considering monsters and what are monsters. And that's one of the big thematics in it. It came out in 2015. It was written and directed by the person I really like, despite the controversy over him, Joss Whedon. Starred all of our favorites in all of their great parts. But basically, in a nutshell, because this is a very expansive plot, it's with lots of developments.
A lot of stuff going on in this movie.
But basically, we join the adventures of the Avengers assembled again to fight off this guy named Stryker, who has been playing with tech that was left over from Avengers 1, or the first Avengers, or essentially the Chitauri, yeah. And they have a successful campaign to try. They're trying to find Loki's scepter, which this guy has taken. They do rescue it, but then it is taken from them by a creation of Tony Stark's, which is a robot. But it's a robot that is now interconnected through the internet and able to move its consciousness around to various different other robots, or puppets, as it sometimes calls them. And it's about how the Avengers have to stick together, fight their own personal fears and demons and dilemmas in order to fight Ultron. And they give birth to a brand new superhero of the MCU.
There's multiple new superheroes in this movie.
Yeah, the twins. Mm-hmm. You would count the twins, yeah. But definitely Vision. So yeah, you're right. What was your first encounter with this movie? Did you see it at theaters?
I did. This is probably, if not in my top five Avengers storylines from the comics. And okay. It's a lot different from the comics because of modern technology mainly. But I love it. I went strictly because I knew Vision was going to be in this movie, and Vision's always been my favorite character.
Oh, okay.
But that being said, out of all the Avengers movies, this is probably my least favorite, which is ironic, I think. It's my favorite story, but my least favorite movie. Yeah.
It's my second favorite after the original Avengers.
Really?
Yeah. And and probably my third favorite Marvel film after Winter Soldier.
Okay.
Yeah. I saw it in the theater, too. I've seen it since then probably a dozen times or more. I really like it, and I mostly like it because it breaks the model a lot of big, huge action movies. I think J.J. Abrams should sit down and have to watch this movie like Clockwork Orange with his eyelids peeled open over and over again to learn that you can slow your entire action down and have nice, intimate character scenes that don't have a big action thing to them and actually don't affect the plot at all. But they're hugely expansive to the characters and the way they interact and the way they feel. We did not need the entire section at the farmhouse. It does not do anything for the plot. Does not put the plot forward in any way.
No.
Not one scene in it. But every scene in it is important and has clues and has things. Because not only is this movie a culmination, I think, of where the MCU... This was, I think, the 11th or 12th MCU movie. I think I've got it in my notes, but I'd have to look it up. But I think it was the 11th or 12th. The second Avengers movie. So the second time that the Avengers all got together. And using the same director, Joss Whedon, who wrote and directed the original Avengers as well. But there's so many, it's not even homages. There's so many Easter eggs in this that are referencing other movies that will now come out of this. Dr. Banner at the thing going, It says the metal comes out of a country called Wakanda, something like that. All of these references that we're going to get in Black Panther and Ragnarok and moving forward, as far as keys go, hugely influential
right.
in the Marvel universe. Yeah. But I love it. I love it because the action sequences all work for me. They're really strong. They're really good. But the character development's even better. And introducing new characters that you instantly care about. They cheated because they used Jarvis's voice for Vision. And I already loved Jarvis and thought he was a great character in all the Iron Man movies and everything. Paul Bettany as that character is Bettany in that character is great. His birth is one of my favorite scenes.
I was going to say that's one of my favorite scenes too.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. You're talking about characters, and I know we need to move on to scenes, but I have a little bit of a problem, and I know it was done for dramatic reasons, but I have a little bit of a problem with them killing off Pietro because that never happened. I mean, he's still around, or he was for a while.
I did see some trivia about that where it is theorized that because just, I guess, the year before this went into production, so I guess 14 or 13 or 14, X-Men had their Quicksilver.
It's a whole Sony Studios thing, yeah.
And it's felt that either Josh or, damn, why did I blank on his name? MCU God, big guy.
Kevin Feige.
Either one of them said, because in this trivia I was looking at, Quicksilver doesn't die. He's actually healed by the same machine that heals Hawkeye.
Okay.
And repairs him. Mm-hmm. And they actually have him in the last, he's standing beside Wanda at the very end when the new Avengers is formed and everything. But those scenes were cut and augmented. And it's theorized that either Josh or Kevin Feige said, X-Men just had theirs and he's really good and popular right now. So let's use him moving forward sort of thing. So that's why they had to get rid of their version of it.
I feel like it had something to do with the whole IP thing, Sony owning. Because technically Wanda and Pietro are both mutants. And I don't think they're allowed to use that word in this because Sony said you can't.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. They didn't.
Right.
I don't think.
No, I don't think they did either.
They called them enhanced.
Yeah, which is really curious considering the new movies that are coming out with the whole X-Men Avengers crossovers thing. But I think it all works the same way as it did with Spider-Man because Sony owns Spider-Man 2 and they grant each other permission or whatever. But I like both actors that play Quicksilver. Is Pietro, for those of you out there that don't know. His real name is Pietro. But now that we have all these multiverses going on, they've got three Spider-Men. Why can't we have two Quicksilvers? So.
True. But then again, I think Joss Whedon is big about
death.
Killing characters. He learned a lot from Buffy of how to do that and how to do that effectively. And that's why he's even in the commentary track, he talks about he built up Clint a lot more than even Kevin Feige wanted because he wanted to misdirect and make everybody think that Clint's going to die. He's the one with the family. He's the one that keeps saying goodbye to his wife. He says, I'll be back, all of that. And then you don't kill him kind of thing. Yeah. So that was all part of it. I agree, but I really like the dynamic of the Maximoff twins. And I like his death. I think it's powerful and it's impactful. Yeah.
Is that one of your scenes?
I like it. No, let me go back. Scenes. So, of course, that opening, because you get one of those, what do you call them in comic books when it's like a full page or whatever? There's a term for that, I think.
But I'm not sure what you call it. I know what you mean. It's like a double page spread where they're all going like this and frozen.
But you get the first one in the first 2 minutes.
Yeah.
When they're all in a line and some of them are flying, some of them are running, some of them are on a motorcycle, and it's that great angle of it. Yes, is it CGI and is some of it a little weaker than in MCU history? Yeah, but I loved it. I still think that opening with Stryker and all the dialogue and everything of language. That's not going away anytime soon, is it? And for gosh sakes, watch your language. That scene.
Oh, you're talking about the scene where they're in the snowy woods.
Yeah, with they're assaulting Strucker's castle.
Right.
Yeah. I like that whole sequence. I thought that whole sequence worked with even Iron Man coming in and they're all shooting at him. Guys, we need to talk here. Shh. Okay. And then they keep firing and all of a sudden the little missiles go and shoot all of them. And he goes, all right, good talk. And you hear that one voice go, no, it wasn't. It's just the dialogue. Everything's really good.
I love the, you mentioned the scene where Vision's born. I can't remember who hits him. Is it Thor? That knocks him across the room, and he almost smashes through the windows and then just stops, and he's just like floating in front of the window. That's, and he sees his reflection for the first time. That's one of my favorite scenes.
And the city. She's the city beyond everything, too. It's both. Yeah, and I include that with everything. The fight that leads up to it, with which, again, keys and references, you still have this antagonism between Cap and Tony.
Right.
And who's right and who's doing the moralistically thing. And that leads to Civil War.
I know. I was wondering why we didn't pair them up. That's funny.
They have the big fight. And then Thor appears and just answers everybody's question and just energizes the container. And Vision is born. And Cap is the one that throws him through the window. And then Thor tells Captain to stop.
Okay. I knew somebody strong threw him because he goes almost through the window and then he just stops.
Yeah.
And that's what's so cool because it shows how powerful he is, that he can just do that.
And then they have that great dialogue scene where he's actually questioning himself. And it's a great dialogue sequence. And even little stuff that they do, which is very Joss Whedon and very cool. He looks at Thor. And Thor has a cape, and he looks at himself for a second, and then suddenly a cape appears and comes down just as he's talking. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the way that ends is a callback. That's the payoff to the plant of the other scene I really like, which is right before that, or a few scenes before that, which is the party. The whole who's worthy to pick up the sword, the hammer. Sort of scene.
Right.
I love that scene.
Yeah, I was going to bring that one up too because it's really funny with the cuts. Downey saying, wait a minute, and then going and getting the glove. And then all of a sudden, him and both Rhodey are both trying with the glove and neither one of them can move it. Yeah, that's funny.
And the down angle when Cap does it and it actually moves, Thor get real scared for a second and then he can't pick it up and blah, blah, blah. Which leads to a question. Do you think Cap really could pick it up? And he did that just to be nice to Thor?
Probably. Because I think it's got more to do with strength. And that I think it has to do with character and not just strength.
No, that's what the whole point is. You have to be worthy enough to have to pick it up.
Right. And obviously Vision just lifted it up like it was a pencil.
And yeah, the way he said the line about, I don't know if there's any way to get you to trust me, whoom, pick it up and hands it to him and goes, but we need to go now. And Thor grabs it and has that kind of
right.
Yeah, good idea. We need to.
But they suggest that Cap can do it, but he's not doing it because he doesn't want to hurt Thor's feelings.
And we know he can five movies from now when he does pick. It's the big moment in Endgame when he actually not only picks it up, he summons it to him. Mm. But yeah, what I call the worthiness scene, which is all of them trying. I even love Black Widow's line where they're going, Go ahead. She's, no, that's a question I don't need an answer to.
Yeah. Yeah, her character is always great in everything.
Yes. Yeah. She is so good in that character. Mm-hmm. Scarlett is so good. But let's see, worthiness, Vision birth.
It's something with Ultron, obviously.
I've got Defense of the Church, which is the other big double panel scene, which is when they're all there, and you think Thor is losing because Ultron has him and finally goes, has it been enough time? And Ultron looks around and Vision hits him and knocks him, and then they have the big, huge fight with all of him coming. He goes, this is all of me. And then there's 300 damn robots coming at him. But it shows that big pan around shot with each of these, some of them all in slow motion, and Scarlet Witch is doing her red arm thing. You've got Quicksilver running around everywhere and Vision with the laser from his Mind Stone. And boy, all that sounded really geeky.
It did.
But it was cool.
It's because there's three different rays, for lack of a better word, coming out at the same time. And one of them's Vision from his head, and one of them's from her hands, and that kind of thing. I was going to say an Ultron scene. I like the scene, actually, with Ultron in Stark's house, where he's in the real shitty-looking robot design before Thor throws his hammer at him and smashes him.
Oh, his birth. Pieces.
His birth, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think that's
a good scene. Yeah, when he's in the leaking one with the torn arm and all, he's talking about strings on me.
Yeah.
Yeah, and these puppets. Anytime James Spader speaks, I'll watch it. I'll listen to it. It's great. He was the perfect choice.
I know. And back in the 80s, we used to hate him.
When he first started, his Sex Lies and Videotape or whatever.
No, even before then, when he was doing Brat Pack type stuff. Yeah, wasn't he in Less Than Zero, maybe, with Downey? I can't remember. He's in one of those.
I think so.
Yeah, yeah. He's been around.
But yeah, but Boston Legal, and then from then on, he's great.
Okay.
He's just so good at this kind of down. I think he does the mumble better than William Hurt did. So
they need to. I don't know how they should bring him back somehow. He'll probably be back in one of these new Avengers movies since they're bringing a bunch of villains on. But in the original story, he was created by Pym.
Oh, Hank Pym?
Yeah. And he didn't create Vision until he was Ultron 5. That's the Ultron I remember most, Ultron 5, because there were different versions of him.
Okay.
Yeah, you should go back and check some of this stuff out if you have a chance. I'm a huge fan of the Invaders, which was the superhero group that Captain America was in during the World War II. And that's the Submariner, Human Torch, Captain America, Bucky, and I can't remember, Toro, which is the Human Torch's sidekick. Now, this is not the Human Torch from Fantastic Four. This is a different Human Torch that's an android. Hank Pym used the body of the Human Torch and technology to make the Vision. Or make Vision.
Okay.
So Vision is essentially born out of another superhero from the 40s. That's why I like some of the comic book stuff too, because it's not in this at all.
But does he have the Mind Stone in him?
He definitely has a stone there. I don't remember them saying that. I think that was just part of his design. Because I don't remember much about Thanos. Thanos came along, I think, after I stopped reading comic books.
Okay.
Yeah. He looks very skull.
I do think it was.
Anyway, that was a little history.
I do think it was brilliant the way the MCU tied everything together, had these mid-credit scenes, had this expansive, literally, universe that they were hinting toward. Mm-hmm. And they pulled it off. And you and I are one of the few people that still think that they did pretty good a little bit after that. Rings of Power, and not Rings of Power, but the Ten Rings,
Shang-Chi,
and Eternals. Yeah,
he's going to be in both Avengers of those too. So Josh wrote this as well. So he did a really good job adapting this story because he had to bring modernness into it, and I like what he did as far as making it the Mind Stone and it being Tony and Bruce instead of Hank Pym, because Ant-Man hadn't come along yet, so they really didn't have him to do it.
Right.
Yeah. Obviously, they have to do it to make the movies work, plus they have to modernize it, because by today's standard, the definition I just gave you of an old android combined with it wouldn't work as well as what they did in this film, I think.
Yeah, and I guarantee Josh told Feige, hey, I'm going to use the Mind Stone to create Vision. Why? We need the Mind Stone for Thanos. That's right. That means that Vision will have to die to give him the Mind Stone. Because that's a very Joss thing.
And that's another thing.
This is your hero and he's going to have to die.
Yeah, they've got to bring Vision back. And I'm pretty sure they're going to. He's getting a series for sure.
We saw White Vision in her.
Yeah, story, and apparently right? White Vision is closer to the Vision that Ultron created. That's a bad guy, I think. And then he'll probably somehow get his humanity back. I'm sure with Jarvis or something. I don't know, but we'll see.
Sure.
Yeah. He can be reprogrammed, obviously.
Yeah. So, yeah, and I've got, and then my last scene that I have in there is in my notes is basically just so many quips and one-liners and things all the way through this movie. Even down to Cap and Tony have this big fight while they're chopping wood. And they're each doing that big manly thing of I'm right in my moral issue, whether it's, isn't that why we fight? So we don't have to fight anymore. Isn't that the ultimate goal is to stop the fighting and all of that? But then when Tony finally gets pulled away by Hawkeye's wife, he goes, don't steal anything from my pile as he's walking away. These little lines that are so good.
Yeah. That to me sounds like a Downey. That doesn't sound like a Whedon. That sounds like something he ad-libbed.
And I think I'm sure it's a combination of all of them. But yeah, definitely. The whole, I don't want to hear the man was not meant to meddle medley. It's another good line.
Yeah. Thor's got some great lines. Mm-hmm. Everyone does. They do dwell a little bit on the Black Widow Hulk connection.
Yeah, the romance.
Yeah.
But again, I think it's set up very well because time for a lullaby. We don't know what that means. What is that? And she's the one that can calm him down.
Right.
And everything else. And then the whole before the worthiness scene at the party, there's obviously that flirtation going on. And even down to Cap making fun of him going, trust me, doctor, as someone who didn't make his move, make your move. Don't wait too long, sort of thing.
Oh, when they're at the bar. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he recognizes it.
Yeah.
Immediately.
And then him bringing up because one thing I saw in a review of this I really liked, and it said, Ultron is not the villain in this piece. He's a tool. But the real villains in this piece are their own fears. Because, A, it's what Scarlet Witch shows them.
Right.
But it's also what they all just intrinsically have. The guilt, the fear, the things from the past. And that's what motivates all of their actions and what they're doing. And that's, I was just saying that because the scene in the farmhouse, when it starts out flirtatious because he's getting out of the shower and she goes, oh, if I'd known you were in there, I would have shared the water with you and everything. It's all that flirtation going on. And then finally she basically says it without saying it. She says, we've got something, we should do something with it. And his whole response is, where would we go? Where can I go that's safe?
Anywhere. Right.
There's no, and that's again why what happens to him at the end. So it's really a tight script. Like you said, I think Whedon did a really strong job of interweaving all of these personalities into this.
Considering how much is going on, because there's a lot going on in this movie.
Oh my gosh. There's so much.
Yeah. It's you could lose count of the plot lines, kind of. You've got the romance. You've got all of Sokovia. You've got Nick Fury and S.H.I.E.L.D. You've got a bunch of stuff going on. I didn't watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. at the time, but I know that they're really well connected as far as like the second season in this movie.
Yeah, this was the way it used to be when they were connected all through Thor, Iron Man, this one, Civil War, and then one more before Feige just said, no, it doesn't count anymore. We're not going to count S.H.I.E.L.D., Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And I was like, what? It's working really well.
Yeah, I don't believe that. Because I didn't get through the end of it. I couldn't give up, I guess, during the fifth season, maybe. But I don't think they would take that out of the canon. I really don't.
That's what they did. Now it's kind of merged back again, and people are saying, no, that didn't really happen.
No, I think it's kind of Star Wars or Star Trek. They're going to try to fit everything in. But I think they're getting back to what they did with these films, though, with the new ones, from what I'm seeing.
We'll find out. Again, I've not caught up on Marvel just because of the plethora of stuff that came out. And
some of it's not that good, especially some of the teen stuff. Don't watch The Echo Show.
No.
But I mean, watch Wonder Man. It's already been renewed for a second season. And okay. You need to see it's great. And then this new Vision show is coming, which both Agatha and the Vision are spinoffs of the WandaVision, if not directly connected. But so anyway.
Yeah, Agatha I know was a spinoff of WandaVision, which I liked a lot.
I want to watch it again. It's been a while.
But Echo is a spinoff of Hawkeye.
I think she's a character that has like a sonar.
Yeah, because
I think she was in Hawkeye. I can't remember what she was in, but it just wasn't.
No, she was in Hawkeye because she was working for a while. She was working for what big guy? D'Onofrio. Mm-hmm.
Kingpin.
You know, the bad guy. Kingpin.
Yeah. But Kingpin is also more Daredevil, and the Daredevil stuff is fantastic. It is amazing. So
yeah, the new Daredevil I've heard is.
And I'm
but I liked the original.
Well, with Fallout, I'm waiting for them to all drop before I start the second half of the season because it's fucking great. It ended in a great place. Kingpin's mayor of New York. It's very, yeah.
Okay.
And Punisher's coming, and they're teasing that all the other ones are coming back, too, the Defenders. But I don't know about that. We could be geeks, and as people are already noticing out there, we could talk about this shit forever. But I guess I can move on to cast real quick. I'm not going to dwell because we know these people.
Yeah.
We have Robert Downey Jr. is Tony Stark, Iron Man. We last saw him in A Scanner Darkly. On this podcast, that is. Mm-hmm. He's been in a million things. We can't say enough good things about him. Chris Hemsworth plays Thor. Another person you're seeing everywhere now. Mark Ruffalo has been around a little bit longer, I think, than Hemsworth. I was seeing him in the 90s doing like romantic comedy type stuff. Really,
and some great dramas, too.
Yeah, a lot of great dramas. And he, I want to say he was in The Normal Heart recently, wasn't he? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ruffalo, to me, is the best Hulk they've had so far. I think he's great.
Because they've had three?
If you include Bill Bixby from the 70s, they've had him and they've had Edward Norton. Was there another one before Edward Norton?
Yeah, wasn't there one?
If there was, I don't know who it is. So
I can't remember his name, but
Eric Bana. You're right. He did play Hulk. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Still like Mark Ruffalo best.
Yeah. I think he's able to play the heart of Hulk, and the CGI is at a place where it's convincing.
Yeah. It looks like him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Chris Evans plays Steve Rogers, otherwise known as Captain America. He was pretty much written to play this role, which is funny because he started off as the Human Torch in a really bad Fantastic Four movie. So he has been with Marvel for a while. Actually, if I'm not mistaken, I think Downey had to talk him into it because he didn't want to sign off on it originally. Scarlett Johansson.
Probably with his experience with the Fantastic Four, probably.
Maybe. Or a lot of people don't want to do Marvel because they don't want to get locked into a decade's worth of work. That's the case with someone I'm going to get to in a minute. But Scarlett Johansson plays Natasha Romanoff, also the Black Widow. Ironically enough, we were talking about Colin Jost earlier in my genre week, and that's her husband. Yep. Also, so she's pretty tight with the Saturday Night Live crowd as well. She's great. Jeremy Renner plays Hawkeye. He's great. If they would have killed him off, I would have been really pissed.
Yeah, especially after humanizing him so much in this. To me, Hawkeye, and that's why I liked the Hawkeye series that they had, but he's the one that is living in the real world, whereas the rest of them really aren't. Steve's not, Tony's not, the Hulk, of course, is not, Thor's not. He and Natasha are the only ones really living in the real world, but Natasha isn't. She's staying covert and under arms, and he's got a family and kids and a wife and a house and still goes out.
That always has made Justice League and the Avengers great to me is the fact that not all of them are really superheroes. They're just super skilled.
Right.
And I love that you were talking about throwaway lines, but Black Widow has a throwaway line. Not all of us can fly. That's a great line. Yeah. And she's down there driving this vehicle through rubble or whatever. Yeah, it's funny.
Right.
So, yeah, they bring the humanity to the superheroes.
Yes, I totally agree. And I think Renner is really good in that role.
Mm-hmm. And the exact opposite, Justice League, it's Green Arrow. But I'm not going to go into that because I haven't been able to watch a lot of those movies because I don't think they're doing a good job with some of that stuff.
Yeah.
But I did Green Arrow, at, like I said, reading comic books, not watching movies. James Spader plays Ultron, the, quote, villain. He was Josh's only choice for Ultron because of his hypnotic voice that can be eerily calm and compelling while also being human and humorous. That's Josh's words I just quoted. I think that's funny because it's like Robert Downey Jr., but not. Because Downey Jr. is not really calming at all, but he can be very humorous.
Oh, no, he's energetic. He's hyper.
He's the exact opposite. But he can do the same thing with the humor. Kevin Feige confirmed that Spader was the only actor Marvel spoke with for the role.
Perfect. It should be.
Sam Jackson is back as Nick Fury. Can't say enough good things about him. Don Cheadle returns as Rhodey, War Machine. And then we get to Aaron Taylor Johnson, who plays Pietro Maximoff, also known as Quicksilver. This guy has been on my radar a lot here lately because he is in 28 Years Later, and he is also in Nosferatu. So he is doing some big parts now.
Who did he play in Nosferatu?
He's like the Jonathan Harker character.
Really?
Yeah.
Why didn't I recognize
him? Oh, wait. Maybe Nicholas Holt's the Jonathan Harker character. He's one of them.
Is he the friend?
Hang on just a second, and I will tell you. Because you got me.
Yeah, he's Harding. He's Frederick Harding, the doctor. Yeah, okay.
Cool. Okay.
I did not recognize him.
You didn't recognize him.
In that role.
Yeah, he's great. Wow. And he's still working, even though he got killed off in this movie.
Yeah, good.
His counterpart in the Sony world is Evan Peters, another great actor who was in a lot of the Ryan Murphy stuff, especially American Horror Story, but he also played Dahmer. So I like both these actors. I think there's room for – just like I like Tobey Maguire and Tom Holland playing Spider-Man. I like both of them. I don't have a problem with two people playing the same role. But I do – hey, he was okay with them killing him off because he was reluctant to sign a Marvel contract. He didn't want to be locked into something forever. So when he comes back, it's a delight because I think he does come back. Doesn't he come back? No. I'm thinking of Evan Peters. Evan Peters comes into WandaVision instead of Aaron Taylor Johnson. That's right. That's right.
Yes.
And then his twin sister, Wanda Maximoff, is played by Elizabeth Olsen. We know her, obviously, as Scarlet Witch because she's now done a lot of Avengers movies as well as her own series. However,
yeah, and they really cheapened her in the Doctor Strange sequel.
I did too. But I did not like them villainizing her in Doctor Strange 2. That bothered me.
Agreed.
Sam Raimi, stop it.
Stop it.
Other people were up for this role or considered for this role. You want to know who auditioned for it?
Sure.
Lindsay Lohan. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, no, exactly. Sasha Peters was considered for the role as well. Daisy Ridley and Chloe Grace Moretz all screen tested for the role as well. I think that Elizabeth Olsen is perfect in this part. I'm glad.
Oh, another one of my scenes is that scene when Hawkeye goes, he's giving her the big speech about, okay, yeah, so the city is floating and we're being chased by a bunch of alien robots and blah, 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 but that's what we do.
It's a great scene.
Sounds crazy, but that's what we do. And so I'm going to go out there and do what I do. And you stay here and I'll send somebody back for you. But if you go out there, you're an Avenger.
I know. That.
And then when she does come out and she does.
And then her brother gets killed and it's like vengeance mode.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's a great scene. Too.
She's phenomenal. I'm surprised I forgot to mention that, but that scene with her and Hawkeye is one of my favorite scenes in this movie.
Because she's, again, it's showing vulnerable. It's not these people aren't superhuman. They are superhuman, but they still also have fears and weaknesses.
Well, and with her and Pietro, mistrust. They don't like Tony Stark at all because he was
hugely traumatized.
Yeah, he's responsible for death. What else? Oh, I've actually got more on her. Hang on. Eva Green was a fan favorite to play Scarlet Witch.
Who?
Eva Green. I'm not sure who that is.
I could see her as the witch. I couldn't see her as the vulnerable part of Maximoff.
Okay.
And I love Eva.
All right. Now I'm going to give you a list of people. I know some of them. Natalie Dormer, Olivia Thirlby, Rooney Mara, Alexandra Daddario, Rosie Huntington-Whiteley, Evan Rachel Wood, Megan Fox, Nika Reed, Noomi Rapace, Olga Kurylenko, Emily Blunt, Mila Kunis, Katie McGrath, Alison Brie, and Gemma Arterton. And Kurylenko, out of all of those, ended up being cast as Taskmaster in Black Widow, the movie Black Widow. But yeah.
Atherton is in Eternal.
And Evan Rachel Wood is in Westworld.
Yeah, oh boy.
Some great people are in there, but I think they hit it with Olsen. I think she's fantastic.
And she is related to the Olsen.
Yeah, she's the younger sister of the twins.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
So she watched her twin sisters be huge stars before she was even acting. So she grew into this. Of course. And now they're still mega rich because they're in like the fashion industry or something. But I think she took the right route. I like watching her. I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
Paul Bettany plays Jarvis, also the Vision or Vision. No the needed. He's fantastic. I can't say enough good things about him.
So good.
Colby Smulders is Maria Hill from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Anthony Mackie is Sam Wilson, the Falcon. They give a good tease of him being an Avenger at the end of this movie. And then Haley Atwell played Peggy Carter. The cast in this movie just goes on and on. That's why I'm not going to dwell on it. Idris Elba plays Heimdall. Linda Cardinelli plays Laura Barton. Stellan Skarsgård plays Eric Selvig. Claudia Kim plays Dr. Helen Cho. Thomas Kretschmann plays Strucker. Andy Serkis is Ulysses Klaue. Julia Deppi is Madam B. And, of course, Stan Lee makes a cameo.
And says Excelsior. And
he does say Excelsior. Yeah. That was his old sign-off in his column that I used to read. As far as awards, this is the only Avengers film not nominated for Oscars. Say what you will with that. Four noms. Of the best comic film. You know what? This must be Saturn Awards. I didn't type that in. Four noms for best comic to film, supporting actor Bettany FX, and it won for costume. So it won a Saturn Award for costumes. Other nominations, but not really that well. It didn't win a lot. And it is not on the 1001 Movies You Must See Before You Die list. I think the first Avengers movie is, if I'm not mistaken. I can check on that. But that's all I have for cast and awards because I don't want to be here all day.
Well, that's a lot.
It's a lot.
It's a huge cast. Yeah. And a lot of them are returning. So they are well established in the MCU and or we saw them in Avengers. Mm-hmm. Even the little guy who's guiding the floating barge things to the helicopter carrier. He's from Avengers as well. So a lot of them returning, all of them great. Have no problem at all with any of them in this film.
No. Did you have any trivia?
I thought this was a great continuation of the Avengers too. Like I said, as you and I both were thrown in medias res in this into this big battle that's going on. But the way they communicate and their dialogue and quips and everything, obviously they've been doing this. They've established this rapport and they've had some adventures that we've missed in between Avengers and now thing. But it's a great continuation of their characters, I think.
It is. It feels like another Joss Whedon movie. It feels like the first movie. But to me, the first movie is a little less jumbled, for lack of better words.
Yeah, because I don't think they're alluding to as much. And Joss has to throw out these homages or these tendrils of stuff for other movies. Once we get to Keys, we can talk about that. There's a lot. Plus, he's trying to...
Marvel movies.
He's essentially introducing, what is it, four characters. Vision, Ultron, and the twins are being all introduced in one movie. And at one point, they're all villains, so to speak. Vision for just a little brief period, but I've got some of the great themes in this are puppets, gods, monsters, and being worthy. So that came out of a review I read that I thought was really good. Who's a puppet of who? Who's controlling who? Even, and it's not just Ultron having his multiple minions. It's even the Andy Serkis character saying, "You're a couple of Strucker's puppets, huh?" kind of thing. And then I watched a medley, a montage of when characters use the word monster or monsters in this movie. And it was lengthy. It was interesting. It was probably 25, 30 different. Who's the monster now? That makes us both monsters. There's monsters out there. And just, it was interesting, the repetitive use of that word, which I think was a choice, of course, by Joss. Lines like, and very prophetic character dialogue. And I'm paraphrasing, but when Ultron first sees Captain America and says, Captain America, where would you be without a war? And it's that kind of stuff. And Tony Stark saying, Junior, you're breaking your old man's heart. And he goes, and if I need to. It's just really great dialogue all the way through it. One scene I did not mention that, speaking of great dialogue, the last scene with Vision and Ultron.
Oh, yeah.
You think Ultron has been killed, but he has one robot left. It's damaged and everything, but it's essentially him. And it's that standoff between him and Vision. And he's saying, why do you like them, these humans and everything else? He goes, they're complicated. And he goes, they're going to die. And he goes, yeah, beautiful things die all the time. Mm-hmm. It was just a really cool way. And then at the very end, you get the impression Ultron's just about to attack. And Vision goes, and it just cuts to that long shot. And you just see Vision's beam go,
you're afraid.
Of you.
Of death. You're the last one.
You were supposed to be the last. Stark asked for a savior and settled for a slave.
I suppose we are both disappointments.
I suppose we are.
Humans are odd. They think order and chaos are somehow opposites and try to control what won't be. But there is grace in their failings. I think you missed that.
They're doomed.
Yes. But a thing isn't beautiful because it lasts. It's a privilege to be among them.
You're unbearably naive.
Well, I was born yesterday.
I was going, that's a great scene.
It's a great scene, but I am bittersweet about it because had it been the original story, it would have been the father-son connection, and you really don't have the father-son connection there.
True. True, yeah. You do not. Yeah, that would have been interesting too.
Or if you want to get into Keys, the Frankenstein connection, which I think Frankenstein's a huge key for this movie.
Huge.
Yeah.
I mean, he is Tony Stark's creation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they hint at, too. I think the father-son thing is much more of a Tony Stark Ultron than a Vision Ultron. Because he calls him Junior.
Right.
Even Scarlet or Maximoff at one point, because they don't call her Scarlet Witch in this, by the way. That's a trivia we should
No, they don't.
But
She at one point was talking to Rogers and says something about he's got a huge ego and thinks he can protect the entire world. Where do you think he got that from?
Right.
So something like that. So, yeah, I think that's the father-son kind of thing. And, yeah, I've got stuff like Hulk, Steve, and the twins were all created in a lab. Tony and Banner are both mad scientists.
So both. All kinds and of, Pym would be, too, if he was
Pym
in
would
this.
Be, definitely.
And would Pym – is Pym – this confuses me, too, because of the comic books. Is Pym Michael Douglas or Paul Rudd?
Yes. No, Michael Douglas.
Okay, that makes sense then. Okay. I can't remember what Paul Rudd's character's name is.
I can't. Ant-Man?
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't remember either right now.
That's funny. But yeah, they change it up because Pym was young in the comics. And
I think Pym was young at one point when he was developing a lot of this stuff. But
right. But Pym would have been the same age as the Avengers are in the movies. But in Ant-Man, they make him older. He plays Scott Lang, who was evidently a latter version of Ant-Man in later comics. Hank Pym was also Giant Man and Ant-Man and Goliath. And
so Pym experimented with all of these suits and everything and the Pym particles and all that before Lang stole them. Mm-hmm.
And him and the character that Michelle Pfeiffer plays was the Wasp, Janet Van Dyne, I think is her name. Van Damme, something like that.
I thought Wasp was Scott's age. I thought Michelle Pfeiffer was Pym's wife.
She is, but she was Wasp in the original comic books. Oh. And then they have a modern equivalent with Scott Lang and the chick from Lost. I can't think of her name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not Eva Mendes, but the other one. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
I don't know why they did that. I guess it's because there's so many different storylines out there. But Pym is the one I grew up with in the 70s and 80s.
Okay.
So, back to your thing. He would have been a scientist as well. So you've got your scientists. You've got your creations. You've got your gods.
Yeah.
Namor is a god of the sea. And we will see him in the new Avengers movies, too. And you have seen him if you've seen Wakanda Forever, but you've probably not seen that.
I've not seen that. Yeah, I haven't caught up. Like I said, there's a lot that I haven't seen. I haven't seen that one. I haven't seen whatever, the Skrull War, Secret War.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that, but Skrulls were mainly in the Fantastic Four.
Haven't seen Fantastic Four yet, so yeah.
Oh, yeah. You need to see that. That's good. That's really good. The new one.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun. And it ties into these new Avengers movies.
Yeah, Rogers has that line with Kobe Smothers about, who would ever volunteer to undergo scientific experiments to defend their country? I don't know. Because she's talking about how bad the twins are and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's a lot of parallels in this. Who's the villain? Who's the hero? What's it take to be a hero? That sort of thing.
Keys? Or have we already mentioned Frankenstein?
Like you said, that's definitely. I've got the keys that are direct influences after this movie influence. So Civil War, Infinity War, Endgame, Black Panther, Ragnarok all came. I have direct references in this movie.
What's the key to Ragnarok?
Other you have Heimdall saying, you're going to destroy us. You're going to kill us all.
Oh, okay.
To Thor in his nightmare, in his vision that Maximoff gives him.
Right, right.
Black Panther, of course, they talk about vibranium. They talk about Wakanda, everything else. This is the first reference to the Infinity Stones.
Right.
Because Hulk actually says that's, again, something that Hulk saw in his vision. That's why he made Vision.
And Thanos is in the mid-credits sequence, too. Yeah.
Yeah, because this is the one where he says, I'll do it myself. Yeah. I remember it was really short.
Fine, I'll do it myself.
Fine, I'll do it myself. Civil War, of course, because already you've got Tony wanting to put a protective shell around the Earth and all of that and leading to stuff. And he and Cap having moral dilemmas about it. So
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have the original comics, of course, and
yes,
the creators, yeah, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. Now, Jack Kirby, I don't remember if he was an original artist for Avengers, but he was definitely an original artist for Captain America, or he one of the bigger ones anyway. And it wouldn't surprise me if he did issues of all of the stuff, because Kirby was very prominent in Marvel at the time.
And both of them are credited in the writing team.
For the story, movie. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I saw that.
I think that was a really good choice by Joss Whedon, too. I've got Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., like you said. This was at a time when they were both going back and forth. So Strucker and the twins and all that are in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the castle, even. I think it's the same castle exterior, as a matter of fact, that they use in this.
I've got other movies that you didn't mention that followed. Well, not movies, but properties. Some of them are movies. WandaVision and Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness, obviously, because they're both Scarlet Witch properties. And Elizabeth Olsen makes her first appearance in this movie.
Correct. Hawkeye, because Hawkeye actually, you have his wife and everything in it, in that story.
So, yep. Yeah. And I liked his series.
Yeah, Florence Pugh is in it too, which is great.
Right. Have you seen Thunderbolts yet?
That would be another one too, is Black Widow, because you actually see the Red Room in her vision and the stuff that she had to go through, which is also pulling back to Avengers when she actually talks to Loki and says, I have red in my ledger, I have to clear. Because again, it's that guilt of what she had to do.
Right. I have The Changeling, the Star Trek episode.
Wow. That's really good. I hadn't thought of that. But yeah, the whole corrupt replicant or corrupt robot that...
Oh, omnipotent almost, or as if. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really good, Tim. Oh, man.
All right, I'm out.
That was it. That's the one we should end with. That was good.
It's a Star Trek episode, folks, second season.
That's right. A really good one.
And if you listen to us on our other podcast over on Patreon, you would know that.
I'm trying to think of other... I'm sure there are other references to that, like the creations that rebel against their... creator sort of thing.
V'ger from Star Trek.
There's all kinds of ones where technology wanting to be used for good was actually the worst thing to do. Technology gone amok thing, which is where Tony's whole bent is in this. Because he does, it's like Banner says, oh my God, I'm in a time loop. This is happening all again. This is how this started, Tony. Yeah.
I don't really have anything else, because to me, when I get into a superhero movie, all I think of are superhero movies, other than Frankenstein and Star Trek, which just happen to be outside of the Marvel Universe.
And stories of trauma, where trauma makes you into a hero later on in life, which is what happens to the Maximoffs.
Mm-hmm.
The trauma is what they focused on so much in their lives, and they were actually used by evil men to do evil things. And then realized that's not the right way and changed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even Pietro changed before he died, because in his last line, you didn't see that coming, did you? Or whatever, when he saved the kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the whole run along line they have. It started with Hawkeye, him and Hawkeye.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Going back and forth with, you didn't see that coming, did you?
Because the first, it's in the woods at the very beginning when he shocks Hawkeye.
Mm-hmm.
And says you didn't see that coming. And then later on, they tag back to it.
So, yeah. It's like his first and last line, I would guess. Yeah.
Very close. He may have had a line with Wanda before then, but yeah. It's very close.
Which reminds me of another choice. Again, a character beat that you could have gotten rid of and not affected the movie at all, but it's a great moment, because when they are first approaching Strucker, and not Strucker, but Andy Serkis's character, Klaus or whatever.
Cal.
And he's talking to them and stalling for time, and he's going, "Would you like a candy? Would you like a candy?" And he puts the candy bowl down, and then he keeps talking, and all of a sudden, Pietro goes, and he's standing on the other side of the room, and he's got the candy wrapper, and he's unwrapping it. It's just a nice little bit that is good character work that doesn't further Ulysses. The plot, but it's great.
Yeah, Ulysses Klaue was his name, or Klaue.
And he shows back up in Black Panther.
He does.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is an epic story. It is sweeping. It is great, but it has all of these tiny little moments all the way through it. All these lines, all these moments, all these character bits. Great action.
Yeah, I agree. I can sit and watch an Avengers movie any day. It doesn't matter which one. Because I love all the characters and I know most of the stories from childhood, or at least different versions of them.
And see, I never read them. So I'm coming into this totally as the cinematic universe sort of thing. So do you consider Infinity War and Endgame Avengers movies?
Yeah.
Or only the ones that say Avengers in front of them?
All of them say Avengers in front of them.
No, it's Avengers Age of Ultron, Avengers Civil War. That's it.
No, it's Captain America Civil War, and it's Avengers Infinity War and Avengers Endgame.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize. Really? Okay.
Yeah.
I guess so.
But Civil War is, I would consider Civil War an Avengers movie. They just called it a Captain America movie.
True.
So it's true. But I consider all of them Avengers movies. They are Avengers movies. But Civil War just happened to be a Captain America movie with all the Avengers in it.
Good point.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And like I said, I can watch them over and over. I guess we're winding up. You folks out there, we would like to know what you have to say as far as your experience with Marvel Comics and the Avengers or any of the characters we've mentioned today. I really like the movie. David clearly loves the movie. And if you want to give your opinion, you can put it down there in the comments. We would love to hear from you. Mm-hmm. This is our season finale. Season 8 is over. This is our 40th episode, and we are going to take some time off for the summer and getting our lead-ins on season 9, which is already starting, believe it or not. I will be posting some bonus episodes of talk that we have behind the scenes and stuff when David and I are getting ready for these podcasts. So you will not be without episodes throughout the summer. They will just be older episodes of outtakes. And we will be back on, I don't have my paper. It's in August.
In August. We'll be back.
Yeah, we'll be back in August, and it'll probably be about the second or third week. I can't remember which.
Cool.
All right. And I guess that's going to do it. It feels weird signing off the last episode.
It won't be too long. We'll be back.
No, with several new horror and science fiction projects.
Yeah.
All right.
I'll see you then.
Bye.
Bye.